Blog Talk Radio.
Satellite Guys Radio presents another edition of Satellite Nation with your hosts, Michael and Dave. We look forward to taking your calls. Do you have a comment for the show? Or maybe you have a question for us? If so, we look forward to your call at 877-SAT-GUYS. That is 877-728-4897. Now here are your hosts, Michael and Dave.
Are you there, Dave?
Yes, sir. How are you?
I'm good. Hope I'm sounding good tonight.
Yep. I think you're sounding just fine. I don't think I got the stream started in time, but anyways, welcome to Satellite Nation. Today is Wednesday, May the 22nd, and it's nice here in Kentucky, about 72 degrees outside, and feels just awesome.
What's about 75 here. And it's our 9th episode. Next week will be our 10th episode. It's hard to believe.
10th episode, plus if you count the 1, so that's 11.
No, I'm counting
the 1. Oh, is that 9? I'm doing some fuzzy math there. Okay. Well, you got any big news in satellite? Something happened today that might dictate the future of a certain satellite service that's now rather small that might get quite a bit smaller.
And what's that?
That is the 4DTV subscription service. And today, it's been known for a little bit, but they announced it today from Programming Center that on June 13th of this year, HRTV, which is Horse Racing TV, is no longer going to broadcast on the HITS platform. And
well,
it wasn't a decision of HITS or Comcast. It was HRTV itself.
Well, I guess that'd be sad for Kentuckians.
Well, apparently I've heard that's a rather highly subscribed to channel for some reason.
Yeah, you know, you wouldn't think it would be. And, you know, there was one time I could get free to air there for a while, and I don't know what happened to it.
It was on there on 91.
Yeah, it might still be different places. I don't know. I think it was on A7 West. But,
it was on 91 for a while.
I was in 91. My memory's
fuzzy. Oh, yeah, 91 C-band.
Yeah, I know it was on, that's what I was saying. I know it was on C-band, but yeah, I used to go through it and stuff, especially when I was first, when I first got into free air, because I got it years ago, and then I kind of got busy with stuff and got back into it a couple years ago, and it was all new to me again, and I was trying to check everything I could find, and I thought, well, check this out, and I actually watched a couple races on it one night.
Watch some races.
Yeah, whatever was on it.
What kind of races?
I guess they were horse races.
Potato sack races? Oh, not car races? I don't know. So what else is going on? So I think we found out a little bit about this NS741 from WSI about maybe not 100% sure yet. The labels may be backwards.
Well, that's what I did. There was a couple of guys on site that said something about it. They tested it. Now, the first unit I had, I tested it. Cause I've got two or three of them. All, you know, playing with stuff and buying stuff. And it worked fine, you know. But I took it out, put in one of the C2s or whatever. Just always switching out something. Then I got another one. But it didn't, the KU didn't work. I thought, well, what the heck here? And I was like everybody else, these things are junk. I even said something about it when I did a review. I went back and changed my review thing, and I said, hey, these are junk, don't buy them. Then I changed it again, saying, wait a minute. I went out and did a test. It was a quick test. I didn't need to do a lot of scanning with it. But
hey, Michael.
Yeah.
We got a caller.
All right.
Hello? You there, caller? Huh. Hello?
Did you lose them? They lose us.
I don't know. I took the mute off.
Can you guys hear me?
Oops. Hello, you there?
That's Dan.
Yeah, hi there. It's Dan.
What's up, Dan? How you doing tonight?
Oh, not much.
How's the weather up there? Did you get the rain that was down here in Louisville earlier? Did you get that yet?
Oh, yeah. A little bit, not much.
I think Michael's getting ready to get nailed with some rain.
Oh, yeah. It moves
No, I'm over here at the college, so listening to you guys on the radio show.
Okay.
Are you listening through the computer or through your phone?
Through the phone. How do I do it through the computer?
Radio.satelliteguys.us.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. I might have to do that if my battery runs low.
I might have said that too fast. Let's go to radio.satelliteguys.us and pick it up there. Sure can. It pops up,
okay.
Get played. There you go.
Hey, I got good news for you guys.
What's that?
I got Cozy TV to come in. I was going to tell you about it last week.
Oh, yeah?
On your 1 meter?
Yeah, on my 1 meter. And there is a trick to it if you use a C-band micro bud, like what I have. There's a trick to it.
Well, let's hear it.
Yeah.
If you use a C-band micro bud and you use a, you have your setup on 99 West and you want 103, you can't use a conical, the blue conical that you normally would use. You can't use it unless you have to go from over the top, the face down.
Yeah.
You have to take off a conical. But you don't have to turn the LNB, like on my dish, it's kind of, I don't know, it depends on what dish you have, but if you set it up like you have it set up at zero on the, have the where the cable is going straight up and down in the back, or your marker is at zero on your LNB,
mm-hmm.
You can start picking up Cozy TV and the Microspace channels. Or
Hold on, Dane. What do you got going on? So you got how many LNBFs on your dish? One or two?
Two. One for C-band and one KU. And I was just playing around with it, and I got it to work where I had my 99 West C-band. And my, I had the GeoSat Pro, the PLL LNB.
Yeah.
I put that on for 103 to see if I could get it, and I did.
Ah.
But there's a trick to the 103 if you use a C-band one, or C-band. You have a C-band on a micro, bud.
So how do you have the 103 PLL mounted to the dish?
Just by like a wire, just wrapped it around it, just testing it. And I could go out there and just raise it up a little bit.
Wrapped around one of the arms that's going down to the dish? Or
It's not on one of the support arms. It was actually wrapped around the C-band LNB. And it has to be kind of at a... it kills your C-band signal. But it will allow you to get 103. You have to turn it... aim it towards the center of the dish, and if you aim it and have it a little bit higher up than your C-band LNB, you would get your Microspace channels, the Huntington Beach cams, and your NBC channels.
Hmm.
And I was working with that for the past about a week or so, and my mom got addicted to Cozy TV. And she says, I like that Cozy TV. I want to watch that stuff. And I'm like, oh, crap. And I was like, now you're going to get addicted just as much as I am. But so I decided to take that C-band off, and I put a the LNB holder and the for the GeoSat Pro PLL LNB on my dish right now. And I have to angle it down and turn that thing almost 45 degrees to get the NBC Barker channels.
Huh. You ought to take a picture of that and post that so we can see that.
Yeah, okay. That's what I'm going to do.
I'm pretty sure I know what you're talking about, but it's a lot nicer to be able to think it and then but actually see it, you know?
Well, that picture.
Yeah. Yeah, once I see it with the pictures, then you'll figure it out. And they had so I got that on there, and I was testing it, and I was able to pick up. I swung it over and got 93 the Aztec channel on the other side of the dish, and 95 West. I got that one. And I did find out something else. There's another thing I tested out, and it just happened to come about. On a 1 meter dish, is there a 2 degree spacing? You can't get a 2 degree spacing on that thing.
No.
Like what you could get from like 101 and 103.
No.
You can't.
Not with the regular LNBs that you got. I mean, there's ways to modify and cut, you know, LNBs and things, and tried to kind of squeeze in, but still, it's just you're not going to be able to do it.
Well, Dave, you there?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. You were awful quiet there. Didn't know if you giving us a silent treatment.
No. I was just listening.
Well.
You made it work.
I got it to work. I don't know. I just put it on there and it worked.
Yeah. I mean, there's ways of getting it to work, but it's not optimum, you know. But
Yeah, I was getting the Pentagon channel and a few of the others. I just placed it on there.
Oh, well, the Pentagon channel, you can get that with a tin can almost.
I was going to say, you're probably getting bleed over, you know, since the dish is so small. I thought you meant KU band. But C band, yeah, you're not.
I meant KU band.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I'm back up. But you're doing this. You got one of them is.
I have it set up at 103 West to pick up the cozy TV channels for my mom.
Right.
And I just placed the LNB off to the left, and I got the Pentagon channel. I was like, what am I picking up? And it was 12180 transponder number.
Right.
One for the Polish and Dutch channel. And I was like, I can't believe I'm getting this. And I just placed it on there and it started working.
Yeah, I've done stuff like that. And it depends on, how strong the transponders is and stuff.
I was like, hot dog. I was like, well, I wish I could just move this right on over. I got 97.
Oh, we got another caller here. Hold on, guys. Hello?
Oh, this is the competition checking you out tonight. How you doing, Dave?
Hey, Mike. How are you?
Oh, great. Watching it rain, I've been putting up some more antennas this week. It's going to give you a little bit of insight on what you can cram into a multi-feed on certain size dishes. I'm able to take a 4-footer, 1.2-meter offset, and very comfortably go with 4-degree spacing with big, wide LNBs, you know, with two outputs, like the Pansats.
Uh-huh.
But the real test is if you try to go to a 3-footer or smaller. The bigger the dish, the wider the spacing is between. It's just physics. And when you try a 90-centimeter dish or even like an 85-centimeter elliptical, 4 degrees is almost stretching it in some cases with a standard unit, and you have to really knuckle these things in sideways. Even on my 1.8 meter, usually I can go perfect 2-degree spacing, and DMS LNBFs are right next to each other. I mean, there's no space at all. And in some cases, if it gets a little crowded or I have another LNB that's a little wider, I've been known to move them in or out an inch and a half. Still get a usable signal just to keep the flow of things so I don't have to put up another dish. But you can generally get 25 to 28 degrees of sky with a 1.8 meter just about anywhere.
Right.
Yeah, you built a big one at Skyvision, I believe, didn't you?
Well, I built a better one here.
Wisconsin. Oh, yeah?
If you look at my website at global-cm.net, there were some pictures I took back in January of a 1.8 meter, it must have been a commercial antenna at one time because it's really accurate. But I went crazy and I went from 89 over to 111, actually, stuck one on for 113 and got solid signals across all of that. And just for grins, 119 comes in on DBS enough to use it.
Hmm.
And not tie up another dish for that.
That's nice. So tell me about this this video thing you guys got going on at SatTalk.
Check it in about 45 minutes. Just go to the SatTalk website. Ralph has got himself a brand new bunch of equipment, and we can do Skype or we can do, let's say, screen captures of people's faces that might be on the phone. So anybody that's a regular contributor will be asked to, if you want to have your face on the air, we'll put your picture on when you're there.
Very cool.
That's
very
cool.
It's low tech, but it'll be interesting. It's the first night doing it. I hope it goes off pretty well. It's been working pretty well under testing.
Well, that's good. So anything going on with Shaw right now?
Well, that'll be next week. Yesterday, they did some changing of, but they didn't change anything with the classic channel numbers. All the advanced, the new stuff, reverted to the 800 and 900 series for the radio stations and the music channels. On the 29th, they're going to turn on their first batch of channels on Anik G1 for all users.
Ah.
So that's what I'd love to have some answers from anybody that has an existing Shaw system with the new LNBF. If you've got a 600 series receiver, I'd like to know carrier noise numbers between channels on Anik F1, Anik F2, and G1, just to do a comparison.
So
there's a guy down in... Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, what do you think I need to hit G1 in Kentucky? 1.6 meter, you think would do it?
No,
smaller?
You might get by. I think you'll get by with a 1.2 quite handily, and maybe a 90, but it won't give you a lot of weather margin. I say this because I've seen two maps now. One of them brought the contours down. They're not labeled, but they appear to be at the plus 45 level. And I would say conservatively, that map at plus 45 is probably about as far as you would stretch the 75E system on a good day. You might go further, but let's just use that as an average. There was a report, somebody near Santa Fe, New Mexico, with a 1 meter dish using a universal LNBF. The numbers appear to be, with the carriers, about 4 dB carrier to noise. That's 9 dB lower than he was getting on F1 in the same 107 position. So if you extrapolate information between all the maps that are out there and those numbers, I would predict you're going to need... a 1.2 meter should get you into places like maybe Denver. It's a toss-up between 1.2 and 1.5. Salt Lake, maybe Reno. The Bay Area is out, but I think you'll be able to use some sort of antenna, maybe as far south as Fresno. We really won't know till things are turned on. And the line kind of goes east. St. Louis is starting to get down there, but St. Louis and Tulsa, Oklahoma City, that area, maybe a 1.5. Nashville, 1.5 to 1.8. Atlanta, 1.8 to 2.4. Really, the jury's out on that.
Yeah.
Mm.
Depends on how fast it drops. But it's actually working better than I thought it would, just following the distances from the existing contours and studying the drop-off as you get around the Great Lakes. The signal on itself, you know, works down to a little bit south of Chicago, and then it takes a line straight for south of Cincinnati, and then it goes east to just under Washington, D.C.
Huh.
So standard systems will work there. I have some LNBs available that were brought in special, privately made, that will work on 107 for both the Anik G1 and the Anik F1R setup with stock new equipment without having to get their antenna. This will allow you to use a bigger dish, whatever is necessary to make G1 work, and then everything else will fall in place. The F2 satellite continues to use a standard 10750.
So if you have the old map, would you still need that LNBF, or only if you have the new map in the 600 series?
Well, let's put it this way. You will not see anything on Anik G1 if you don't have a 600 series receiver. Everything is MPEG-4. So that's the first thing to think about. If you've got a 505, it makes a great spear receiver, but those new channels are not visible on it because it's not MPEG-4.
That's what I was thinking, too.
The other rule is that if you get set up with a 600 series or a 605 or 630 and get their extended quad unit, which is electrically identical to what I'm describing, you will have to have all receivers on an account set up that way, even if it's an old one.
Okay.
They don't allow you to mix. That's really asking for trouble if you start, they'll think you're splitting an account or something.
Gotcha.
So, you know, keep a low profile.
So to get the new G1 channels, you got to have the newer map that was made for the quad?
Yeah, basically, if it's set up with the extended quad, not the old quad, but the extended, if you've got a receiver that's mapped for that, you're ready to go. You just need a signal from either a 75 or 60E system where they work, or a device like I'm describing that has the 107 satellites stacked on top of each other.
I've got the old one.
The old
one? On the 600 series.
It just needs to be remapped.
Okay.
Just have it remapped for extended quad if you have an appropriate LNB, and you'll be in business. The separate LNBs, you'll have one on 107 for both satellites, a conventional one on 111, and you tie them together with a 22K switch.
Yeah, okay. Because that's what I have now, but just two regular LNBs.
Yeah. This will make it a lot more flexible as far as how big of a dish you can use.
Yeah, that's great.
So, anyway, I just thought I'd check in and say hi. So
I can Skype into the show later?
You can Skype. You can use the toll-free. You can call a regular number.
I'll have to try that out.
Want to do. I'm not sure if we're set up for Skype right now or not.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Try the toll-free.
All right.
Anyway,
we appreciate you calling in.
Yeah, we appreciate you. Really appreciate you calling in, Mike.
Good luck now. Bye.
Thank you.
All right, we got Mike Cole to call in. He's a
yeah.
smart guy. He knows all
he
kinds
is.
Of stuff about satellite.
Yeah, he knows more than what we know. That's why I kind of hushed up, because I don't know a whole lot about Shaw. I didn't say a whole lot. I was like, you know more about Shaw than I do, Dave. So I was like, okay, I'm going to sit back and listen.
Well, I don't know
I mean,
all the channels on this new G1, but it's definitely going to be a lot more. And I'm interested to see what channels are all on there on the new satellite they launched.
Yeah. Have you got a current? Yours is current, working, or?
I'm not sure.
You're like I used to be. I had so many different ones.
No, I've heard that alleged that you can get a 600 series subscribed to the Shaw service, and the HD quality is pretty darn good on it, actually.
Wow.
There's some different channels, like Discovery World is different than the Discovery Channel, so it's interesting.
Yeah. That's what's nice about that stuff.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to have to probably order one of them LNBFs for my coal and try to get that going. Dan, you still there?
Let me try something, baby. Hang on.
All righty.
The satellite.
I had them fixed where I wanted them. Try this.
Phone lines are now open for Satellite Nation. Call us at 877-SAT-GUY or 877-728-4897.
So that's the new prompt. So yeah, what exactly is the story behind those?
I won't do all of them, the thing, but there's a website, a place you can go, and these people do it professionally for a living. They make liners up and stuff. I mean, you pay big bucks to have it. Tons of liners made up, you know, especially like your big radio station or something, you're going all day, you know. And all kinds of liners, silly stuff, crazy stuff, whatever, depends on if you're a rock show or a rap show or if you're a talk show, whatever you need. And they can do, you know, down to being real serious, if it's, say, it's Christian or gospel or something, to being real crazy with some dirty words thrown into it and dirty sounds, if it's whatever. But what they'll do is some of these people get on this website. It's kind of like a forum, too. And what they'll do is, for a donation, they'll do up a few liners for like internet radio stations and things like what we're doing, as long as it's nonprofit. You know, and they'll go and check it out and stuff and say, oh, it's nonprofit. We're not here having much advertisements. You know, we're not a big radio station or whatever. And when they see that, they'll, hey, you know, give us a couple bucks and we'll, you know, do you a couple things. And I've had a couple of them done already. And one guy did, he was a guy, and he must, I don't know if he's just trying to get a donation or he was just, I don't think he's very professional, because I was looking at his little list of stuff and he hadn't posted very much, and he did one, and it was a free one, didn't have to pay anything for it at all, and it was, welcome to Satellite Nation, everybody tuned now, thank you. I was like, dude, that ain't what I was wanting upbeat and, you know, put some life into it.
You guys still there? Can you still hear me?
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead, Nate.
Okay. Well, I was also listening to you guys on the computer, so.
Yeah,
there was a little delay there, but.
Yeah.
How do I sound? Do I sound okay,
Dan? Yeah,
you guys sound, it sounds pretty good.
All right. And you're listening through SAC. We do.
Yeah, I'm listening to you both. I'm listening to both, and it's all right on the website, but it sounds better on the phone.
Gotcha.
Yeah,
I'm using my Apple iPhone, so.
Yeah, I was wondering about that.
But what was I gonna? I got a question to ask you guys. Another good question. About dissect switch, 4x1.
Yeah.
Dissect switch.
Yeah.
I'm trying to tune in 30 West with that, and what I have to do is when I turn to hook that, put my mortar tube and the satellite dish out there to get 30 West, and I tap it into the dissect switch. What I'm supposed to then have it all set up, ready to go. It does not want to pick up anything on it. It doesn't register signal strength or quality, nothing. But if I unhook the switch and go straight to a straight feed and disable the switch on the receiver,
yeah,
and then I set it up for 30 West, everything, it'll come right in. So then I have to unhook it, hook it back into my feed, and then turn it on to whatever port is for 30 West, and then have to do it that way. And then it comes in.
Well, my thought is there's a couple things could be going on here. One, you're hooking it up wrong. When you're hooked up wrong, you got the settings wrong. You think you got the settings right in the receiver, but you don't. Or two, you got a bad switch.
That could be.
How are you setting it up in the receiver?
How am I setting it up in the receiver?
Yeah.
I'm setting it up on, port 4. I've had to switch ports on it to see if that could have been a problem. No, it that wasn't a problem. It was...
Does other things work on that switch? If you hook those up, say, like...
Okay. I've received 103. I've received 99. I've received anything else in the switching.
Even on the same
fine.
Board, but like you say, you switch the ports around. And say port one, you're receiving 103 just fine, and you switch it out to port or put 30 west to port one, and you've got 30 west at port one, all that, and it's still not working right. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I switched from port one to port four, and it still did the same thing, but what I have to do is, if I want all of the satellites, say four satellites to come in, I use the DICEX switch. I have to run in a longer cable to that switch.
Right.
But if I want just 30 west, I can tap that thing right into my living room window and run it right into the flat wire, and it works just fine. It
right.
will come in perfect. But it will drop it will drop on signal strength if I tap it into the DICEX switch. And it has to run a longer cable, probably about another 25 feet. But
now, what L&B are you using again on your 30 West? I can't remember. But
It's a Slimline SuperDish mod.
Right, but so you've got SuperDish L&B on there?
Yeah, it's not the greatest, but it does
right.
receive CubaVision.
Oh, right. I want to get in my head what you've got. So you're using the... Now, do you have that, like, was it 10... kilohertz offset or whatever that stupid thing is. It's, instead of saying it being like, say, 10750, it's like 10760 or something like that weird. I noticed that's when I...
Yeah, it's kind of a little off, like a few...
Yeah.
Just a little bit off, but not much. But
you changed that to, you know... So that's kind of... Dave, what do you think?
I'm just listening to you guys here. So I'm wondering, so you just tried it with just two satellites hooked up to the switch, and it didn't work?
Well, what I did was I had 99 West C-band on port 2. Port 3 was 103 West.
Okay.
And then I had port 1 or port 4 to choose from to tap into... to use 30 West. So those two ports
So you were only using three ports.
Yeah.
That's why it didn't work.
That's why I didn't have another one plugged up with the four?
Yeah, if you would have had all four plugged up, it would have worked just fine on those cheap switches.
Well,
I've noticed that. Or if you use just two, you use one and three, and that seems to work, or it does for me.
Okay, because I've tried four, like having all four hooked up, and it still does the same thing.
What does it do? It doesn't select on just the first port or just 30 West?
Well, when I have it set up for 30 West, then I go down, set it up for the CubaVision transponder number, the 1188. Four, I think it was.
Yeah.
And then I go from there and I turn it on to, say, port one or port four, whatever the wire is hooked up to. The cable is, or the RG6 cable is hooked up to.
Yeah.
And then I can go and turn it and have it everything set up. And I have it even marked on my porch, spray painted with white paint, and had it marked. So I know which way to turn the dish. Have it marked where I have to skew it, and have everything marked, place it. I just pop it down on the ground. There we go. And or on the patio, and have it all set up. It won't even register anything. But then if I do a live, or if I run just a single cable to the one for the for 30 West just by itself, I can get it. But then I would unhook it. And then plug it into my feed line going to the switch, and then the switch comes back to my receiver, I hook that back up, and it would say you dropped a little bit in signal strength, but you're still receiving quite a bit of quality.
Yeah, you'll lose some signal strength because there's two extra insertion points on the line of the receiver.
There's 3 dB insertion loss, but. What you said, Dave, is happening. I've never had that happen before with the with one of those switches. If I put it on port 1, it works. If I put it on port 2, it works. 3, 4, it works. It don't matter.
Oh, really? So, yeah, I've always had a mess up where if I just had two satellites, I had to use port 1 and 3. And then if I wanted to use all four, it always seems like you always have to have all four hooked up for some reason it just doesn't work all the time, right?
I've never had that happen. In theory, that you shouldn't have to do that. You know,
I know.
You got some crazy switches somewhere, Dave.
it may be. I may have something wild going on, but I don't know.
I don't know.
Dan, you ought to try. You need to get you a 22 kilohertz switch, and then get you another 4x1, and get you 8 LMBFs on that dish, and see if you can get 8 different satellites.
No, for the one on the west side, the 1 meter, you mean?
Yeah.
The micro bud, yeah. Well, what I wanted to do was, if you see in the pictures, if you see two studs running through the pole, if you looked on my pictures for the one, is that online? Yeah, it's on Satellite Guys. You'll see my postings, the pictures that I posted before, and I wanted to add on it looked like a tree. You know how the J poles come out on the side.
Yeah.
And come out on the side of it so I can have one aim for 87, one for 121, but I can't get 121 because of the trees. And then have one in front for like 97 or something else I could get.
Right.
So I want to have an 8x1, and they're 2.0 switches, Disec switches.
Yeah.
Both 2.0. So am I only allowed to use the 1.0 settings on the micro HD?
Oh, are you running 2.0?
Yeah.
As the settings?
Yes.
Did you try them on the other one? Just out of curiosity?
That's right, both switches. And the
No, like 1.0 or 1.1?
1.1 is what I would use.
1.1, okay, because it had ascending and it had like 16 of them I could choose.
Yeah.
And I just ran it on 1.1.
Just use the first 8. Go to the first thing comes up and go backwards one and it'll say 16 or whatever. Go from there and use go down to 8, there's your 8 to 7, 6, 5. Use 1 through 8 on that right there. I ain't in front of the receiver right now to tell you exactly what it says, but yeah, I use the one before switching so long, but I used to encoders and stuff, but I never had that problem with any of that stuff, but I use the DigiWave 1x8 switches. I need 1.1. It don't matter what ports I get hooked up, I can switch them around, move them around, and it works just fine. And I used to have the one before switches go out all the time, constantly go out.
Hold on, we got a caller, guys. Hold on one second. They were on hold. Hello?
Hey, this is Brian.
Hey, Brian.
Hey, Brian.
We left you on
I
hold
had a failure
that
on call, man.
Yeah, just
how
got
you
home
doing
and,
tonight?
And, doing well. Just got home tonight and turned on the home theater PC so I could listen to you guys and we just heard the talk about the Disec switch. Just a quick question. Dan, are you turning off the power when you're inserting these switches?
Yes, I shut off the receiver because I don't want to screw up the switches.
Okay. Yeah, because a lot of times if the receiver is powered up when you hook up to a switch, and this applies to 22s as well, you definitely can scramble and not just blow them, but it kind of depends when the Disec command is issued and where it is, you know, in the flow. Definitely, if you're using a 2.0 switch, I don't use those too much, but definitely you need to go into the 2.0 settings, and I think you got some good advice about working backwards, but I just didn't hear anybody discuss if power was on when you inserted the switch.
Because when he said something, I was like, that's why when I said it, I've had him blow before. When you unhook it, you're fine, but hooking it in while it's live, you can blow it or scramble it.
Definitely one thing that a lot of people aren't really aware of until they run into the problem. On a 22 kilohertz switch, you need to have typically both legs loaded. So I know this isn't dealing with your DISEC issue, but, you know, quite often we'll get a call from a customer who says, hey, I have a 22 kilohertz in line, and, you know, it's just not going to port 2. And do you have anything connected to port 1? And so that's just something to remember. But definitely, I think think you put them on the right track by having them use the 2.0 switch setting instead of the 1.0 or 1.1.
Yeah, and run backwards from where it starts count 16, go down from there.
Okay, so it's just go over to the 1.1 because it, when it comes up to antenna setup, can you guys still hear me?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
So when it comes up to the antenna setup, and I would go down to the set, and I go, it tells you what satellite, what transponder you're on, and it says for your switches, and it will say either 1.0 or 1.1. So you want me to go to use the 1.1 settings?
Yes.
Okay.
Correct.
And okay. All right. And
because what happens is it's expecting a cascade of commands to be issued, and if you're using the seek 1.0, it doesn't pass cascade. You know, for a call where a switch call.
Okay.
All right. Well, I'll sign off, but just wanted to see if I could pitch an idea at you there.
Yeah. All thank right. you, sir.
Have you got a minute, Brian?
I sure do. How is everybody doing?
Good.
Fantastic.
I had you on a couple weeks ago. We didn't really get to a couple of things. I was going to ask you about one thing we had an agenda. You know, we both had wrote up. using the Android box development you was talking about.
Uh huh. Yes.
She was wanting to talk about. I just want to hear what you want to talk about. That I was curious. We never made it to. Of course, we went way over. You know, but we never did make it to that.
Yeah, no, just doing some work right now on an Android box and just seeing if it's going to be a good candidate for another box coming down the pike here. You know, it's running the ARM A9 processor, which in a lot of the forums you'll read that they've certainly been challenged for the blind scan. There's some little glitches with it right now, and we've noticed that in our samples here. But finally, you know, we started working Android development about 2 years ago, but there just were not any good modules available to work with.
Right.
But now with the T2 development going on over in Europe, a lot of that T2 is trickling down to the S2 because, you know, just a ton of similarities between the terrestrial T2 format and the satellite S2 format.
Uh-huh.
So it was kind of like the jump start that needed to occur for some of the stuff to start getting ported over because, as you know, factories don't invest too much into development tools if there's no market. And the T2 market really opened up, you know, some engineers to start providing some of these things that have really been lacking on Android. So, you know, we're really excited. The Android box, you know, I know we teased it a couple times, but it does do 420, 422, and 444. Both in, you know, the 420 and the 422 on the satellite, and then, of course, all three formats when you're doing media playback.
Right.
So, you know, just kind of excited. It's fun to be playing with the box that has some potential rather than putting a box, hooking it up, and then wanting to ram your head into the wall after you graduate it. But, you know, it's good to see something really good come directly from a factory saying, hey, this is what we have for you to start with, and then they give you some great software development tools. And the best thing that I've seen so far is a year ago we were challenged to find any of these Android boxes that were certified for the Google Store. Now these manufacturers are actually investing in getting the proper authorizations for their equipment. And so, you know, what good is Android if you can't go to the store and just pick up any app that you want? And we talked about it on the forum is that, you know, well, GPS, great. What can we use it for? You know, and a couple people said, oh, you know, save the money. A GPS chip is really not that expensive, and then you can start incorporating a lot of these Android apps that require identification.
You say I was...
Well, yeah, it could be something.
Well, not you,
thousand,
that's fair, yeah.
But, you know, a lot of things like mapping, even some of these sites for IP delivery requires authentication of where you are to release. And so I think the GPS integration into a set-top box with Android, we're going to start seeing some incredible multimedia opportunities. And you know, I'm with you guys. I don't always want to see a box that does everything mediocre. But I think with Android, we're seeing quite a bit of very intelligent development having happened because of the strong tablet market.
Right.
You can take the same apps and bring them right into the set-top box. We're no longer, you know, it's the same processor that they're putting in these tablets. So, you know, it's just a different display. Instead of something flat sitting on your lap, it's going to be, you know, 52-inch and sitting on your wall.
Yeah, because all the phones usually have those mini HDMI ports anyways, I believe, don't they?
Well, repeat.
Mine does.
Yeah. Like an Android phone that would run on this chipset has like a mini HDMI port so you could hook it up to your TV. So, you know, this box is just a phone without a screen with a normal HDMI jack.
Yeah, and, you know, you can get one of these Android boxes, and a lot of people are breaking them so they can hook up like a USB ATSC tuner or a USB DVB-S S2 tuners. So there is some work going on these, mostly in Europe, but, you know, you were still sitting there with a tablet in your lap with a dongle sitting there.
Yeah.
And it's really, it's super intelligent. So really been excited. You know, some things that you really don't think about, but, you know, what about getting like Dish Pointer app, throwing it on there? Well, suddenly, you know, you go, okay, you know, what can we do along with other manufacturers to bring in some of their technology? So maybe it doesn't have an accelerometer or it doesn't have a built-in compass.
Yeah.
But it certainly can give you a lot of tools, and I think it's going to really revolutionize what we expect from a set-top box. And the great thing is it isn't just a wild Linux where everybody kind of compiles their own code to meet their own needs. And then, you know, the Android market is pretty well developed, and things that make it into that market typically are ready for show.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty sensitive tuner on the one that I'm playing. I have three of them here right now, just trying to kind of figure out which manufacturer is putting together the best hardware. But, you know, the tuners are using the same that we're using the Micro HD. The AV 2011 and the 2012 are used a lot. So you have the silicon tuner and getting away from the separate mechanical tuners. Even have one where they're talking about offering a swappable tuner. We'll see if that's a reality. Nobody has an ATSC option on board yet, you know, just because our market is relatively small, especially, you know, in comparison to what they're seeing for market for T2 in Europe. So I'm not really sure, you know, what they're going to do. There really isn't a big monetary investment in ATSC, as I read somebody was on the forum last week saying, oh, probably they don't put it in because of monetary. Well, the licensing on it really only adds up to be, I think it's $8 plus, you know, your Dolby and that sort of thing. So it's not really a licensing cost issue. It just is that it's such a different animal than DVB-based systems.
Yeah. It sure is.
You know,
it definitely is.
And then it comes down to, you know, unfortunately, our EPG is different. Our closed captioning is not subtitling. Our, you know, it just goes down the line of the beauty of lobbyists in Washington and what it can buy.
Right. That's what it is.
But,
well, yeah,
you know, we'll be reporting more as we kind of move down the road. But, you know, right now it's kind of just trying to figure out what factory is leading the way. And then it really comes down to, great, the firmware's there, but, you know, what resources do they have? And, you know, we've identified three strong companies, and we'll just see where that leads. But right now I'm kind of wrapped into the positioner with co-rotor control. That one's really caught my attention for right now, and so that's going to probably be on the lead burner before an Android box comes out.
So just out of curiosity, when you watch TV on the Android box, you do you go into an app, I guess, and that's what will tune in the channels?
Exactly. Yep.
Okay.
So you launch the app, and it's just like, you know, it gives you an interface. When you see this interface, you'll say, boy, that looks familiar, because it looks like you're on a tablet.
Yeah.
A lot of things are missing because, you know, these are really made initially. Their market is, you know, for these fixed transponders in Europe. And so, you know, blind scan is not that important to them.
Nope.
Strong switch control, but not very good motor control.
Yeah.
The biggest problem that I see right now is providing enough current to, you know, do the multiple things that we expect it to do, you know, drive a motor, operate switches, everything simultaneously without loading it down. And every one we've seen so far going to have to do some mod to the PCB to provide, you know, at least three or four amps, you know, just to, because we know what hobbyists load them up with.
Oh, yeah.
And then really just want to thank everybody for the input so far. I think the PLL C-band LMBF is now, what, down to maybe under $2,000 each?
Yeah.
What a deal.
Hey, Brian.
I'm kind of doing that real tongue-in-cheek, guys, because, you know, we know that the number of people viewing and even taking the time to respond is not indicative, but you know, I just wanted to get everybody's input of things that are important to them. And are we even thinking about, are we realistic in what we think we need to sell to get our R&D back on it?
Right, and even the people that say, and it's going to fly off the shelves, you buy one, I'm like, maybe, the first 300-400, and then, you know, you know, people don't realize it's small the market as it is, but we're just an niche market.
Yeah, you know, the way I look at it is, you know, if we can, it's typically, by the time you're out of it, you're into it for usually about $10,000 to do your prototypes and your builds and proof of concept stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, by the time that it gets to market, you know, based on if you're selling for $30 a pop, you know, your first order pretty much has to be sold and dump everything back into covering your draw on your bank.
Right.
And then it really, you know, you can't exceed what the market demand is. Just because it's painted red and blinks doesn't mean people are going to want it. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, Brian?
Yes, sir.
Hey, I asked about that. Wally and the and Mike seen and others have seen that cooling system. What do you think for that for your LNB? You were asking a couple of weeks ago.
Well, you know, as far as cooling an LNB, I think that, you know, some of the responses, I think it was like update Lee, you know, a valid point. You're going to get much better performance on a quality DRO being cooled. But, you know, the overall thing is the cooler you can get your LNB, and I'm talking dropping it below, you know, below zero, the cooler you're going to get it. The electronics just are going to perform better. And so it doesn't matter if it's a DRO or if it's a PLL. You know, if you can drop that temperature down and keep it cold and avoid any heat buildup that destroys the, you know, the signal and starts introducing noise and everything that comes along with it, you know, it's going to improve. Now, you know, I think some of the things that I've been seeing, I'm not really sure if it's going to provide any gains in signal quality per se. I think it would make it more stable and you know, keep it from overheating. But I think what we're talking about here is supercooling.
Oh, okay. Well, I put that idea out on Satellite Guys. I didn't know if you've seen that.
I did. It was a novel idea, and it would be kind of fun to see, you know, something like that hooked up and do a side-by-side comparison. I think this is what the hobby's all about.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, it was just when you rely on like a thermocouple or anything, wind or solar, you're waiting for it to kick in. This is controlled by your receiver.
Right.
So,
and what kind of temperature cooling would you see over ambient?
Yeah, it wouldn't be much, but it was like how they would take a copper tubing and wrap it around a gun barrel when they were firing it to cool it down. That's what I was trying to think. You could wrap around a cooling tube around the LNB and see if you could really get it cold. That's kind of my idea was.
You know, some of the things that I've seen as far as cooling, you know, what they've done is they've actually adhered, made the block of the LMDF more to be like a thermocoupler, and then just, you know, whatever device they were using to cooling was to, you know, whether it be fins on it or whether it be an actual, you know, I've seen a couple things where I think they've taken some different liquid, you know, I think, trying to remember if it was, I doubt it was hydrogen, but it was some sort of liquid, and they were just encasing it in that. You know, there's been some pretty novel things. You know, I think the biggest thing that I always identified was, you know, can I ship it across the border, or does it become a dangerous device that is going to land me in Guantanamo for a couple years?
Oh, it was just going to be like cooled by antifreeze or water, so it wouldn't been, you know, something that would be a mess to clean up or something. But it would just be something you could turn on with your motor or with your motor option. If you didn't have a motor, you just use the same one receiver. But if you use a motor, you would use two receivers. So the second was,
I think
the second
to
one
see
could control
performance
it.
Gains. Yeah, to see performance gains, I think you're really needing to look at something that doesn't just drop it, you know, 20, 30 degrees off of ambient, but actually drops it and retains, you know, below zero.
Okay.
But,
right.
You know, I think any time that you stabilize your LNB, whether it just be a standard DRO or, you know, a PLL, you know, the more you can keep it stable and at a constant temperature, probably the more reliable and repeatable results that you're going to have.
Okay. So I was just wondering about that. So, since you were called in, so just wanted to know.
Yeah. Cool idea. I'd love to see real numbers. Definitely hook it up and, you know, do a test without it. Do a test with it. Make sure your test happens on the same signal within, you know, a short time of each other under clear conditions, similar temperature, everything, you know, so keep your test time very short. Crank that thing up, drop your temperature, and see what it does. I would love to see somebody playing with that.
Okay. Don't wait 2-3 months to Dan and do the make it. We can switch it out real quick, and hopefully it's in the same day almost, you know, within the hour or so, and see.
Well, it needs to be relatively close because, as you know, if you watch the same satellite signal, you know, nighttime coming through dawn, you know, as the ionosphere, you know, as different layers move around, you are going to see those signals shift considerably.
Yep.
What becomes RF neutral at certain times of the day is going to be reflective. So, you know, that's why normally, if you don't have a controlled chamber to be doing single testing in and you're using live signals, you know, you don't even know what's going on the uplink end. You don't know if somebody's, you know, are they running that transponder on AGC? Do they have it fixed? You know, is something going to crank up on a nearby satellite, give you adjacent satellite interference? So, you know, anytime you're doing kind of uncontrolled testing, definitely keep it as close together as possible. And when we're testing LNBs on real-world signals, we usually try keeping all comparisons, you know, within, you know, 15, 20 minutes of each other. Just swap through them and do a proof of signal capture and then quickly move on after you optimize it. And another thing, when you're doing testing, you know, pick a transponder and optimize on it, because if you pick a different transponder each time to optimize on, it's not going to be an apples-to-apples comparison.
That's right.
Well, I do need to get going here. I have a couple things going on, but thank you for asking me to stick around for a few minutes and keep up the show, enjoying hearing Mike there weighing in. He certainly knows heck of a lot more about Shaw than I ever think about.
Me too.
Yeah.
I'm going to sit back and listen.
And I love the, you know, his multi-feed antennas, you know.
That's something Danny's
going to look
at his website.
Yeah, it's fascinating to see those bars.
Yep.
What you guys said? I didn't hear you, Wally or Dave. I didn't hear you.
Oh, what's that?
No, you said something about the different. I thought you said something like different antennas or something he had. Or
oh,
like
yeah, Mike Cole, he's got some antennas that have lots of feeds on them. If you go to his website and check them out, they're pretty cool. I mean, he's got like 30 degrees almost on some of them.
That's what I was saying. You go and check them out. Go look at the pictures and stuff he's got. But Brian,
sure,
calling in.
Yeah, thanks, Brian.
Okay, guys, have a great show, and loving listening to you guys, and catch you later.
Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye, Brian.
Bye now.
And, Dane, we're going to have to say bye-bye to you, too, because we're out of time.
Okay. Well, you guys have a nice night.
You too, Dane.
You too.
Thanks for calling in, man.
You're welcome. Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
So, hey, Michael, now we got this new deal you got to close out the show.
Yeah, I was going to say, anything else you need, want to talk about before we close the show out?
No, just appreciate everybody calling in, and I'm intrigued by this Android development. It seems pretty cool that you would load an app.
I've been following it, and when Brian was on a couple weeks ago, we was supposed to get into that, but we just
ran out of
time.
Yeah.
So we're going to get Brian on again a couple weeks. He's not got back with me exactly what time he can, you know, what night he can get on, but we're going to have him back on for the whole show again, and so we can ask him about that and a couple other things he want to talk about. But other than that, it's been a good show again, and I appreciate everybody calling in, and my laptop went sweet. Dave, why don't you hit that button? You see the outro?
Which one is the outro female? All right. Good night, everybody. Check out Ralph is on live right now on video, which is pretty cool. All right, take it easy, Michael. All right. We'll have to do video next week, I think, don't you think? Do some video next week.
We might try.
Yeah. Well, I set up a Ustream. I just ran out of time. Later, everybody.
Excuse me, sir. The show's over.
Thank you, and good night.
Thanks to all that tuned in tonight. Join those crazy satellite guys, Michael and Dave, next week for another exciting episode of Satellite Nation.
Bye-bye.
I want to see motion, movement. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay?
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Bye-bye.